welcome to the Times Online Pittsburgh Penguins podcast. This is your host, Brian Metzer, and it is great to be back with you this week, as it is each and every week here on the program. This is the show for March 15th of 2017. We are down to just essentially 3 weeks left in the season, maybe a little bit more than that, but less than a month of action remaining here in the National Hockey League schedule before those crazy Stanley Cup playoffs kick off. Before we move through anything else, I want to thank Chip Demonic for playing us in, as they do each and every week here on the Times Online Pittsburgh Penguins podcast, with a little snippet of Less Than Circular. And you know what that means, of course. If you're not here, you are less than circular. But anyway, let's tell you where you can find this show before we jump into what has been a crazy week of Penguins hockey, because boy, so much stuff has happened since we last got together here on the program. We had a suspension, we had a knockdown dragout kind of game in Winnipeg, we had some entertaining hockey in Edmonton, Vancouver, and Calgary, and of course we are getting you ready for the big battle with the Philadelphia Flyers tonight, Wednesday, in Philly at the Wells Fargo Center, 7:30 p.m., a rivalry Wednesday between those two teams on the NBC Sports Network, and that will end a five-game road trip for the Pittsburgh Penguins. But you can find this show, as well as everything else that we do in terms of podcasts, at timesonline.com itself, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and, of course, SoundCloud. All you have to do is search Beaver County Times, and you will find our content there for you. We hope you will check it all out. You can find our written word over at timesonline.com. You can find our sports desk in general at Times Scores on Twitter. That's where we will be sending out everything that we write in terms of our Penguins coverage, our Scholastic coverage, our Steelers coverage, our Pirates coverage, and we are ramping up, of course, for all of that. Steelers in free agency, the Pirates in spring training, Penguins coming down the home stretch here, getting ready for the Stanley Cup playoffs. So we have a lot there for you at timesonline.com, and it's all coming out at Times Scores. You can find me on Twitter at Brian_Metzer. Hope that you will look me up over there, because I love interacting with you on social media, and that's where you can find everything else that I do. I just put out my new NHL.com column this afternoon as well, in terms of the fantasy defenseman that I cover. So if you're in a fantasy league and you need a couple of guys that you're keeping your eyes on, or you're trying to bolster your lineup now as you try and make the playoffs in your fantasy league, check out my column. You'll also see all the stuff that I do for the Beaver County Times, and we promote all of our Penguins Radio Network stuff there as well, so do check it out, please. You also get a healthy dose of metal, pop culture, and everything else that I'm feeling like talking about on any given day. But let's jump into the week that was in terms of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and I'm not going to dwell too much on the games that are past, just because, we have a lot to get to in terms of what lies ahead, but I did want to talk a little bit about the impressive road trip that the Penguins went on, because it really was impressive, because they have had no less than seven regulars out of their lineup with injuries. Yes, I will have some good news for you here on this podcast that some guys are getting healthy. It looks like they might be getting back in the fold. But generally speaking, the Penguins, I don't know that a lot of people were thinking that they were going to be able to make a run here over this road trip and play so successfully, because they had all those guys out of their lineup. They've now missed 188 man games, and that came in the form of Matt Cullen, Trevor Daley, Carl Hagelin, Patrick Hornquist, Chris Letang, Ollie Matta, Brian Rust, and we got a little bit of a fear or a little bit of a scare on Monday night that Mark Streit might jump into that fray as another injured body, because he was knocked out of the game on Monday against the Calgary Flames after blocking a shot, and he had to be evaluated at the hospital and all of these things. But he looks like he might be able to play tonight. But we'll go through the guys who are on the mend and getting back into the lineup here shortly. I wanted to talk a little about that Winnipeg game. I know it's a little bit of an old news situation now, being as that it's a week ago, but you saw first of Evgeny Malkin getting a fight in this game with Blake Wheeler. Blake Wheeler made a big deal about saying he wasn't going to be looking for any retribution. You may remember that when those two teams met back on February 16th in Pittsburgh, Geno hit Blake Wheeler, and it was looked at as a little bit of a dirtier hit. People were upset that Geno wasn't suspended. I know there were differing opinions on that, but that had Wheeler and the Jets coming out all guns a-blazing in terms of hits yet again in the Penguins' 7-4 victory over the Winnipeg Jets in Winnipeg on March 8th, last Wednesday. So it started with that fight between Geno and Wheeler. It transitioned into Tom Cestito fighting former Penguin Chris Thorburn. That was a brutal fight. And then, of course, Tom Cestito came out and laid a big lick on Toby Enstrom, the Winnipeg Jets defenseman, knocking him out of action, and he's still out now. He's got a concussion, and he maybe was dealing with some facial fractures and a ton of other maladies that came from that hit, and people were just destroying Cestito for it and destroying the Penguins for putting Tom Cestito in the lineup, and all I'm going to say to that is, if you recall a little bit of commentary I shared with you, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago, and it came from Paul Steigerwald that he shared with Josh Getzoff and I on our weekly Penguins Live weekly that we do over on 105.9 The X. He said that he talked to Rob Schick, the NHL's supervisor of officials, on this one evening in Pittsburgh while the Penguins were going up against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And he said, you know, Rob, what's the deal here? We've got a lot of tape on Brandon Dubinsky now, trying to take cheap shots at Sidney Crosby. They're taking big hits. They're trying to lay the lumber on our guys here. What's going on? You know, are you guys going to start to call some penalties on this stuff? And Rob Schick said that, well, maybe the Penguins should look into policing this by themselves a little bit. Go out at the deadline, pick up a Ryan Reeves or that kind of player, because that kind of stuff sometimes can be handled on the ice between the teams and the players. It doesn't necessarily have to be something that needs to be penalized. And that was just a mind-blowing bit of stupidity that I heard, because when you think about it, the league's trying to take headshots out of the game. The league's trying to cut down on fighting. The league's trying to cut down on all of these things that tend to shine maybe a dark light on something that they're trying to really promote as something that's family friendly and fun, etc., etc. They want to get the offense going. They want the skill to shine. They want the stars to do their thing. Well, then you're saying that some meathead should get a chance to play. And no knock on any of these guys that tend to drop the mitts and go out there and play a physical style of hockey, but it usually just doesn't suit the way the teams are playing these days in the National Hockey League. But based on that little bit of information, the Penguins went and called Tom Cestito up for this next game against the Winnipeg Jets, because they knew that the last time they met, the Jets were hitting them at every turn. They knocked Justin Schultz out with a concussion. He was hit from behind. They knocked Olli Mäntä out with an injury. He's still hurt now. There were other big hits laid. There were many other guys that came close to being injured in that game. So they said, okay, Tom Cestito's going to play. Yes, he went out and did some stupid things, and the Penguins were stuck playing with one forward short the rest of the night because he only played roughly over 60 seconds in the game total. Well, they're just doing what you told them to do, league, so I'm not saying it's right, but you can also make a case that Cestito didn't even try and take a run at Toby Enstrom. As my colleague over at TimesOnline.com, Mark Madden, has been saying so eloquently for the past 2 weeks, or the past week, I'm sorry, he felt that Tom Cestito was more just clumsy on the play, and he's right. Tom Cestito's a big man. He fell, essentially, as he was trying to lay a hit on Enstrom. Enstrom also saw him coming. Enstrom chose to turn his back to him, which, it drives me crazy when players do this. You just assume a guy's not going to hit you. Chris Letang does this all the time, and it drives me out of my gourd, because by now, you know you're going to take a lick. You saw the guy coming. You made the turn. You put yourself in a vulnerable spot, not taking the onus off of the player laying the hit by any means. But you've also got to take a little ownership for your position on the ice and where you put yourself, and you can't allow yourself to get whacked. And that's what Toby Enstrom did in this situation. And I heard a really interesting comment from Colby Armstrong last week as well. He said he played with Toby Enstrom with the Atlanta Thrashers whenever he was traded there from the Penguins. And he goes, we used to go crazy ourselves as his teammates because he would put himself in these vulnerable positions. He would turn his back on oncoming guys trying to lay a lick on him. He said himself, as a member of the Penguins, hit Enstrom in that same way. So that's neither here nor there, but it's something I wanted to share. But anyway, Penguins did all this craziness early in the game against the Winnipeg Jets. Winnipeg, of course, starts to deteriorate as always, because that's how they played the Penguins for some reason. That's how they decided to play them. Well, lo and behold, whenever the silliness got out of everybody's system, the Penguins said, well, okay, we're ready to play hockey now. They roared back because the Jets had been manhandling them a little bit. They were scoring some goals. Well, the Penguins said, yeah, that's not going to happen. They beat them 7-4 in what was a pretty impressive victory overall. So good stuff from them there to make it happen. That took them into Edmonton for a Friday night affair that was had everyone a flutter, of course, because why? The heir apparent, the king, the new king, Connor McDavid, was going to face off against Sidney Crosby. And don't get me wrong, I'm very impressed by Connor McDavid. I'm just not ready to anoint him the next big thing, while there are still several other big things still happening in the National Hockey League, and that's been the way this year, though. Going all the way back to the middle of the summer, everyone was ready to just anoint Connor McDavid the scoring champion, the Hart Trophy winner, the MVP. And, you know, we'll just say this. I mean, yeah, we all feel like Sidney Crosby was right there nipping at his heels for the scoring race, having played less games, and Evgeny Malkin's right there as well. But Patrick Kane of the Chicago Blackhawks just passed that, the young man in the standings. So I digress. I won't get into too many opinions on Connor McDavid at the moment, other than to say he's got blinding speed, in case you missed the broadcast, because that's something that you would have heard time and time again, because that's sort of, it's like they used to say about Zdeno Chara, where you were lulled into believing that his first name was essentially his height. You would always hear some broadcaster make a dumb comment saying something like they would be calling the game, and then you would just hear the puck moving up ice, and Chara would end up picking up the biscuit. And you would hear, the 6'9" Zdeno Chara, the 6'9" Zdeno Chara. And it got to be that that's what he was just known for, that he's 6'9". It made no matter that he was a Norris Trophy winner. It made no matter that at one point in time he was just a freak of nature, being able to produce offense with that frame, with 250 pounds, he just was known as a big guy. And it's a shame, because that starts to happen. Now, in the case of Connor McDavid, all we hear is blinding speed. He just does everything at a breakneck speed, a blinding speed. And our own broadcasters from Root, it was Paul Steigerwald and Bob Airy, they were guilty of it. And I swear, if I was playing a blinding speed drinking game that night, I wouldn't have been able to get through probably the first, maybe second period. We're talking lights out. You'd have been down in a heap. Your head would have crashed off the table, because these guys, this kid couldn't touch the puck without the blinding speed of Connor McDavid, the blinding speed. And so then, of course, we're having fun with this. The passes travel to blinding speed. He eats a sandwich with blinding speed. I mean, the kid probably, is he like the Flash now, the Marvel superhero, or the DC hero? Sorry, take it back. I don't want to offend Marvel fans by saying he was theirs. He's a DC comic character. Anyway, McDavid was great in the game against the Penguins, but you know who was better? Marc-Andre Fleury. He led the Penguins to a 3-2 shootout victory over the Edmonton Oilers. The Penguins left a little on the table in terms of offense, even though they were outshot in the game 42-30, but the flower bloomed in a big way in this one, and it's been great to see. Fleury's been playing so much better since the trade deadline passed. You know what he did in relief against the Sabres last couple Sundays ago? Well, he answered that effort with a really solid showing against the Edmonton Oilers on Friday. And essentially, you can say he was the only reason that the Penguins got the two big points in Edmonton, because not only was he brilliant through regulation time, he made several outstanding stops in overtime. He robbed Ryan Nugent-Hopkins with the scorpion leg kick. He also robbed Connor McDavid on a breakaway. And it was funny, because McDavid, you could see, was frustrated. Because I'm, for some reason, one of the only people that sees this. He looks bitter and angry on the ice all the time. He doesn't hesitate to you know, him and ha and, you know, I don't want to say cry and whine. That's not the right terminology. But he complains a little bit. And you can say that maybe, yeah, Sidney Crosby did that, and all these good young players do it at that age. But Connor McDavid does a lot of it. He breaks sticks when he doesn't succeed on the ice. Recently broke a stick in a fit of rage, and rather than anybody beating him up about it, all they did was praise him because he picked up his new twig, took a pass, and scored. But they always leave out the fact that he broke the stick just because he was upset because something didn't go his way. So in my mind, you can't have a tantrum on the ice, and this kid does it all the time. And he came close when Marc-Andre Fleury robbed him in overtime, because Fleury first didn't bite on his many moves, but then he took the kid's legs out and stopped him from scoring the game-winning goal, and it was just a really fine showing for him. And speaking of fine goaltending showings, it then comes full circle against the Vancouver Canucks with a Matt Murray appearance that was great. He shut the Canucks out for the second time this season, getting a 3-0 decision against them and making 27 of 27 saves. Now, you can say that Fleury is starting to sort of horn in a little bit on the playing time of Matt Murray just here in the last week or so, and that's a good thing because, as we talked about, so many games in March, the Penguins still have, if you count tonight, they still have, it's 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 more games remaining. They've played 16 total whenever the month of March comes to a screeching halt. But you're going to need both of these goalies. But Murray was outstanding against Vancouver. Made some great stops, and the only person better was Ryan Miller, and he still allowed 3 goals in the game. Ryan Miller kept this game from being a 7-0 blowout for the Penguins. Sidney Crosby, Connor Sheary, and Jake Guentzel just really rolled up the offense, at least in terms of chances. They were really putting shot after shot after shot on the veteran, just weren't able to get all of the offense going against him. And then, of course, we get into an impressive showing on Monday against the Flames. Only, and I say impressive because the Penguins were playing their fourth game in, what, just a handful of nights. It started Wednesday, yeah. So they played between Wednesday and Monday. They were playing their fourth game. They had traveled all through Western Canada. They were playing later than they're used to, at least in terms of their body's internal clocks. And they were going up against the Flames, who had won 9 straight games. And they were able to get themselves a point out of that. They probably should have won. And the biggest issue for me is not that they didn't get 2 points. It's that they didn't get 2 points when they had a power play in overtime, 4-on-3, with all the talent at their disposal. And before we talk a little about the Flyers game, let's talk about that power play and in general what it's been doing. They've been scoring a lot since March 3rd, because over that span, they've now rolled up 7 power play goals on, I believe it's 21 attempts. So that's outstanding production. What's frustrating is Phil Kessel refuses to shoot the puck. I'm not sure why. I don't know what the deal is. He's in the left wing circle all the time, and he gets great looks. He gets pass after pass after pass. You got Sidney Crosby. You got Evgeny Malkin. You got Justin Schultz feeding this kid like a bear at the zoo. And all he does is stop it, takes a look, quick pass back across the rink to Gino, Sid, Schultz, stop, reset, do again, rinse, repeat, no goal. I don't know why he will not shoot the puck. It's just he's shooting pucks still, but not near to the level that he should. And I don't know if he's not feeling comfortable there or what it is. But when he shoots, he gets rewarded. He's not shooting now. And I know he doesn't like taking the one-timer from that area, but you could still, if you're going to stop it, throw the puck to the net. But by the time he stops and waits and does all this, usually a defender is on him and breaks up the play or whatever. So that's very frustrating. Keep your eyes on that tonight in Philadelphia to see if he continues to do that, because for whatever reason, he just does not get the shots through quick enough on the power play, and I think it's hurting the unit as a whole. It hurt them in that overtime for sure, because he had a number of great looks from the left wing circle. You also saw Sidney Crosby miss a brilliant opportunity. You saw Justin Schultz miss a couple. He put some shots on net, and it just they have got to find a way to ramp that up in terms of getting the shots on goal. But you're not going to shake a stick at 7 goals on 21 power play opportunities. Before I preview, the Flames did go on, though, to get their 10th consecutive win. Penguins have their 5-game winning streak snapped, but it's still a 6-game unbeaten streak now, technically, even though a loss is a loss. I hate when they say unbeaten, but if the league is going to allow you the latitude to do that, then we're going to use it. It's a 6-game unbeaten streak now for the Pittsburgh Penguins that they're going to look to keep going in Philadelphia tonight, Wells Fargo Center, 7:30 p.m. One other thing before I move on, though, Justin Schultz made his return to Edmonton back in that game whenever the Penguins went up against the blinding speed of Connor McDavid. And I got to say, I wanted to punch most of the reporters in the face that were in and around Justin Schultz for his scrum. I get it. The kid didn't produce during his last year or so there, maybe his last year and a half. Let's all remind everyone, though, that the pressure put on him by the organization, the pressure put on him by the media there, just crumbled. It crumbled him. It broke him down. It didn't work for him. This is a kid that now is probably he's playing like one of the best defensemen in hockey this season. But his confidence had been shot to such an extent that he was stuck playing with guys like Andrew Ferentz, first of all, and it's not the 2003 Andrew Ferentz. It was the 2015-2016 Andrew Ferentz. That was nowhere near an effective tandem. He was playing with guys like that. I think Nick Schultz was another partner that he previously played with. And long story short, though, these reporters are around Justin Schultz, and they're asking him, I should say berating him, about his confidence. Well, so what's so different now than what was happening when you were here in Edmonton? Well, first of all, talent, for one. He's playing with a number of talented players. He's playing with the team that just won the Stanley Cup, which is a far cry from where Edmonton is even today, even though they fancy themselves a cup contender. That he answered it. He said, you know what, when I was here, my confidence got to such a level, there were times where you didn't even want the puck because you were afraid you were going to make a mistake. Well, that was just chum in the water for the Sharks and that media up there. And they said, well, so you were afraid to handle the puck? And he said, no, I wasn't afraid to handle the puck. You just didn't want it because you were overthinking everything. And it went from there. And I want to say, this poor kid answered the same question in seven different forms, probably back to back to back to back to back. It's just, I can't stand, and I know we all have a job to do. I'm guilty of it myself. When you need something for a story or you want to get to the meat and potatoes of something, you definitely need to ask things different ways or phrase things differently. But I will never, if I get an answer from a guy that I can tell he doesn't want to talk about it, especially if it's in a scrum, I'm not going to badger him. You're not there to badger these guys. And some people I know in the media feel like they are there to badger these guys. That's my job to badger them. I need what I need. Well, it's a privilege, I think, for them to play, and it's also a privilege for you to be there covering it. So you got to give and you got to take. You can't just crap all over one of these guys by beating him up and trying to catch him and turn things around on him and get him to say something. I think Justin Schultz at times is a little bit shy, but for the most part, he always gives you a thoughtful answer. He's always very willing and open and honest. So there was no need to ask him 10 different confidence-based questions. You know, why not talk to him about what he's doing this year and what's going on with his team, the Pittsburgh Penguins? But I heard a similar thing happening just today. I was listening to the pregame audio that came out of the locker room from up in Philadelphia. And a number of Flyers reporters were beating up Mark Streit about, so did you know you were going to the Penguins in the trade? Did they tell you earlier in the day when you were traded to the Tampa Bay Lightning? Well, we had all these conversations 2 weeks ago. I get it. You haven't had a chance to take your crack at Mark Streit. But he answered and then said, well, you know, I thought maybe I was going to move on. So, yeah. So you knew that you were going? You talked to somebody and they told you, and it goes on from there, and it goes around and around and around, and the guy keeps hammering it home. They see the scab and they tear it off, and the guy's bleeding again. Let's ask it again. How'd you get that wound? Let's ask it again. Let's ask it again. It goes on and on and on. And then it was question after question after question about the impact on the Philadelphia Flyers. Well, his impact on the Flyers is done. It doesn't matter anymore. He's now a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And thankfully for those Pittsburgh Penguins, he's going to get a chance to get back in the lineup tonight. I think so anyway. He's a game-time decision. Because he was hit with a shot in that Calgary Flames game. And it looked like he was in bad shape. He really was hobbled as he went to the bench. And he was evaluated at a local hospital up in Calgary. And luckily, he was back on the ice today for the morning game day skate in Philadelphia up at Wells Fargo Center. And Mike Sullivan had this to say about both Matt Cullen, too. It's a combined quote, so we might as well mention that because Cullen's on his way back into the lineup as well now because, you know, he had been skating for a handful of games ahead of the game. But he didn't get into those games and play. But now it looks like he's very close as well. So Sullivan had this to say. Cullen and Streit will be game time decisions. They felt really good out there today. We're hopeful we'll have them tonight. He also gave us an update on Patrick Hornquist, saying that Hornquist was on the ice, or he is on the ice. That's a big first step for him. It was non-contact today. We'll see how he responds. The next step is contact. Then at some point, he'll be a game time decision. We're encouraged that he's on the ice. We feel like he's making significant progress. We also got some good news over the past 24 hours about Chris Letang. Jim Rutherford gave an update saying that he felt that Letang was making progress. He's feeling better. They don't have a timetable yet for him, but they anticipate things moving in the right direction. Sullivan reiterated that today, saying that yes, he is making progress and feeling better. Matt Cullen said of his injury in general, it's definitely going in the right direction. I'm feeling pretty good. Anytime you're out, you feel a responsibility to get back as quickly as you can. You try to push it as much as you can, especially this time of year. And another thing that stood out to me is then somebody said to him, with you trying to push to get back in the lineup quicker or more quickly, is it a scenario where you may have a lingering issue as the season rolls on and as you move into the playoffs? And he said, no, I will be 100% when I come back fully. So that's good news. I liked hearing that because you don't want something that's going to linger and drag on. Mark Streit said, this morning I felt pretty good. I'll take the warm-up and see how I feel. I was surprised how good I felt. So generally, it sounds like he and Cullen will be back in the lineup. Patrick Hornquist gave this assessment. You know, he's been out dealing with a concussion. I feel good. It's nice to be back with the boys and on the road, getting back to practicing. It took a little while to not notice the concussion, essentially, is what he was alluding to. That's life. I'm back here with my skates and gear on and having some fun. So good to see, because Patrick Hornquist is a very valuable member of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and they need him. In my mind, that's a guy that you're not going to have a lot more success with without getting Patrick Hornquist in the fold. So good stuff there. Glad to see Horny making his comeback, hopefully here in the next couple of games, if not the next game. Wouldn't that be great? Did want to mention, though, that the Penguins will be playing the Flyers tonight. As you know, I was getting off track because I want to tell you about a signing that the Penguins made yesterday as well, which we'll talk about here in just one moment. But they are in Philadelphia tonight. They're 2-0 against the Flyers this season. They've also won 5 of the past 6 meetings between the teams. That's pretty much par for what the Penguins have done against the Flyers in the Sidney Crosby era. They have been very good in Philadelphia, going 16-8-3 against them with Crosby in the lineup and 18-12-3 overall since he joined the club in 2005. Crosby riding a personal 5-game point streak against the Flyers dating back to last season, and also a 3-game goal-scoring streak against the Flyers. He's picked up 5 goals and 8 points over that span. And that run has pushed his career totals against the Flyers, too. 36 goals, 48 assists, and 84 points in just 57 career games. He's picked up 4 game-winning goals over that span and has run up a plus 13 rating over that span. The thing that you don't like seeing is Sidney Crosby's also picked up 34 penalty minutes in those games, and that is because they tend to get his ire up a little bit, get his scruff going a little bit. The Sid gets fired up against them, and they get fired up against him. But he has played some of the best hockey of his career against the Philadelphia Flyers, and specifically in Philadelphia, because in 27 games at the Wells Fargo Center over his career, he's picked up 16 goals, 23 assists, and 39 points. So that is just impressive to see. Now, what's made him so good there? He thinks it is the rivalry itself and the comfort he feels in that building. He said the rivalry in the games and games bring the best out of both teams. For whatever reason, it's worked out that way. When you play in that building, or in a building, you get comfortable, and we've played a lot of games here over the years. So he is also thriving, I should mention, because they'll be playing again together tonight on that line with Jake Guentzel and Connor Sheary. Those guys combined to roll up 4 goals, 8 assists, and 12 points in just their last 2 games. They've also combined to put up 35 shots on goal, which over that span, which probably could have had those offensive numbers through the roof even more so, if not for the goaltending performances of Ryan Miller and Brian Elliott in those 2 games. Their shot totals account for 42% of the Penguins' totals over those 2 games. Sullivan loves what he sees from that line so far. What allows them to be successful is that all 3 are brave, he said. They don't get pushed around. They're elusive in tight space. They play with courage. Those two things can be dangerous even if they are undersized. I think their hearts are bigger than their physical stature. That's what allows them to be successful. So those are some of the things I talked about in my storylines for tonight's game as well. I think it's going to be a good one against the Flyers. Flyers still, I think, fancy themselves as somebody that can make a run at a playoff spot. I think they're probably done for. They're 7 points out of the playoffs right now, and they've lost 3 straight games, so it's not looking very good for them. They have 70 points. They've also got to leapfrog the Florida Panthers, Toronto Maple Leafs, and Tampa Bay Lightning, and technically the New York Islanders, who are in the final wild card spot right now. But those teams are all jockeying for that spot to try and get themselves in. I don't know that it's going to happen, but it's still a big couple of points for the Flyers tonight if they can get them. I just don't believe necessarily that that is going to happen. The Penguins did make an impressive college signing yesterday. They picked up Zach Aston Reese, who was he's a Hobie Baker finalist now in the NCAA. He is 22 years old. He's going to start as a left wing for the Penguins, but I believe he played center a lot in the NCAA for Northeastern. And he clocks in at 6 foot, 180 pounds, and it's a player that the Penguins are really excited about, because when you look at this, he was being courted by probably half the teams in the National Hockey League. He inked an entry-level deal that will kick in next season. He's going to start with an amateur tryout contract with the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins. He's recently completed a 4-year stint at Northeastern. He led the NCAA this year with 63 points, 31 goals in just 38 games. His goal total also led the NCAA. As I told you, 6 foot, 180-pound native of Staten Island up in New York. He completed those 4 years in Northeastern, averaging better than a point per game with 148 points, 66 goals in 145 games. That's just outstanding production at the NCAA level. And he credits Bill Guerin and Mark Recchi with getting him to come and sign here in Pittsburgh, because they worked hard to recruit him. These are guys that were up there after his games waiting to see him, and just having those guys around, he was just impressed. He was very impressed by the pitch that they gave him. He liked what he saw from Wilkes-Barre Scranton. He liked what he saw here in the terms of what Penguins have done, or the Penguins had done with college free agent signings in the past. And he thinks he can succeed here. And some people in the Penguins organization think he could be in the Penguins, the NHL Penguins lineup as soon as next season. But this is what he told the Penguins official website yesterday. He said, "It came down to a few teams, and when I had time to sit down and think about it, today it just felt like it was the right place," talking about the Penguins. He said, "The conversations I've had throughout the year with Mark Recchi and Bill Guerin, coming to some of the games and speaking to them after games, kind of just their track record over the past few years with what they've been able to do with bringing college guys in was big." And Bill Guerin, very impressed. He said he fits the criteria that we hold our whole organization to, our players and staff. Two big components of that are character and compete, and he epitomizes that. When we saw him play, this is a kid that on the ice really seemed to fit with how we want to play. After meeting him and talking to him, we realized he fits in with us off the ice as well as on it, and that's huge. So look for him to step in, hopefully as soon as next year. Jim Rutherford said he thinks he could be a Patrick Hornquist-like player, so that's really fun and exciting stuff to see. We have a Twitter question that I want to get to, because we are running through this show. We're already at 33 minutes today. I've been ranting and raving here, going through a lot, but our good friend Needles Heel got us this question, as always, so thank you for that, Chris. He said, "With all the Pens' injuries, the new players and call-ups are playing well for the injured. When all healthy, do you see some of the original starters not playing because of the solid job the replacements are doing?" Well, sure. I think to a certain extent, some guys might be earning themselves more playing time and maybe a bigger or better chance to be involved in what the Penguins are going to do moving into the playoffs. If I take a look at their roster right now, I certainly think Jake Guentzel is not going anywhere. He's someone that's probably going to maintain a spot next to Sidney Crosby. Carl Hagelin's somebody that might see himself falling down the lineup, maybe into a third or fourth line role, which he's probably played a little bit more of this year anyway. I still think he'll be in a situation where he's playing with Nick Bonino on the third line with somebody. But when you look at it, I think Guentzel is the main beneficiary of what he's been doing lately. Brian Rust is going to have to work hard to get himself back in the lineup, but I think his speed is really much appreciated by the Penguins coaching staff, and I think they'll want to get him back in. Josh Archibald's a guy that you might see get a spot game or two, even when everybody's healthy, based on the way he's played. And then on the blue line, if I'm Olli Maatta and Trevor Daly, I'm not feeling too confident about necessarily automatically getting my job back. And that's because the Penguins have proven to have gotten some solid performances from Mark Streit. I think that Ron Hainsey's also been solid, if not spectacular. He's carrying a +4 rating in 9 games since joining the team, and he's played upwards of 22 minutes a night. It's 21:55 to be exact. I think he needs to maybe keep up with the pace of play a little bit more at times, but the blue line is far from locked in. I think Letang is the only given to step right back into his job when he's healthy out of all of the Penguins' injured players. Patrick Hornquist will probably do the same. But yes, some of the guys I just ran through, Chris, are probably going to get a longer look in terms of getting a chance to play once the Stanley Cup playoffs roll around, and that's just good. Depth is never a bad thing. And Oscar Sundquist, too, I don't want to leave him out. I think he's done some really nice work for the Penguins so far, and if you had to lose a Matt Cullen again or somebody like that in terms of an injury knocking them out of the lineup, I think Sundquist is a guy that could really give you some solid minutes on your fourth line. He's averaging just 7.29 a game so far, but he's not looked bad or overwhelmed or overmatched since he's been playing so far this year. So, Chris, thanks for that. Don't forget, get your questions in if you want to hear them answered on this show. Hit me on Twitter, hashtag BCTPensPod, and we will get those questions on a future edition of the show. Let's get you your news of the weird here. And this one, police say, how about this? Before we even get into this, if your friend sent you a photo of a murder scene, of themselves essentially, how would you react? Accusing one or the other, a male and a female, of one or the other of committing the crime. Would you freak out? Would you call the cops? What would happen? Well, that's sort of what happened here in a situation. We have the police saying that a couple staged murder with ketchup, texted photos. Coming to you from Sandusky, Ohio, home of where SeaWorld used to be, and I believe Geauga Lake was up there. But police say a couple in Ohio staged a murder scene in a bathtub in which they poured ketchup over her, and he then sent pictures to friends saying he killed her. Sandusky officers showed up after getting calls Thursday night from 3 people police say were hysterical. That's when officers discovered that the scene in the couple's bathtub had been staged. Police say Natalie Schlett and Micah Risner were charged with inducing panic. Both pleaded not guilty Friday. Well, what did you do then if you didn't induce panic? Police Sergeant Don Allen tells the Sandusky Register that while it might have been funny to the couple, it wasn't a joke to police. The couple couldn't be reached for comment. No telephone numbers were listed for them. Court records didn't indicate whether they have an attorney. Boy, you're dumb. I just figured I'd throw that out there. And with that, we wrap up another edition of the Times Online Pittsburgh Penguins podcast. We didn't do it with blinding speed, but time did fly by with blinding speed, as it always does here on the show. Love talking to you guys about some puck. Love talking Pittsburgh Penguins with you. And we will be back again a week from now, of course, maybe with the Penguins jumping into first place overall in the Metropolitan Division and the NHL, as they did, or as they've been in contention to do now for a couple games in a row. They were tied with the Washington Capitals a game ago. They now have to win to keep pace with those Washington Capitals with 97 points, and it's going to be fun to see if they can't make that happen, because who would have thought, after Kevin Shattenkirk arrived and Washington was anointed Stanley Cup champions in the beginning of March, that the Penguins would be right there ready to jump over them as they do each and every spring. But with that, we do wrap up this edition of the Times Online Pittsburgh Penguins podcast. Thank you for listening. We will be back again next Wednesday, so you better be there or be less than circular for the Times Online Pittsburgh Penguins podcast.